On behalf of the Council, I acknowledge the Gadigal and Wangal people of the Eora Nation on whose country we are meeting today, their elders past and present. When opening these meetings, it's usual for us to introduce ourselves. I'm David Lloyd. I'm a lawyer. I'm a QC. I'm a former judge of the Land and Environment Court. I'm a former acting judge of the Supreme Court. I am presently a Professor of Law at Western Sydney University.
My name's Annalise Tor. I have qualifications in architecture and planning and mediation. I was a Commissioner of the Land and Environment Court, and I am currently on a number of local and state panels.
My name is John McInerney. I'm a registered architect and town planner. And I'm an ex-Deputy Lord Mayor with the City of Sydney.
My name's Kath Roach. I'm from a company, Sync Solutions. My company, we do a lot of work across local councils in New South Wales, predominantly in the governance space. On this particular panel, I am here as a community representative.
The next item is declarations of interest. Each panel member has signed a declaration of interest form to disclose that they have no interest to declare. Miss Roach has a conditional declaration of interest which she will read out.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. In relation to item one, plan and proposal consolidated Inner West LEP, I declare I've got a non-pecuniary less than significant conflict of interest as I own a residential property within the LGA and there may be a perception of conflict on this basis.
All right, that is noted. So with that, we can straight on to the first of the two items on the agenda. The first is the planning proposal for the Consolidated Inner West Local Environmental Plan. This is the proposed Consolidated Inner West Local Environmental Plan encompassing the three former local government areas. The panel has gone through the draft Consolidated Inner West Local Environmental Plan with a fine-tooth comb, I might say, earlier today. And the panel is unanimous in endorsing the planning proposal for the Consolidated Inner West Local Environmental Plan 2020 for consideration by the Council, subject to some changes. And these will now appear on the screen. I hope. I should add the changes are chiefly of an editorial nature.
Can I just clarify that we're endorsing it for the purpose of public exhibition? We're an advising council of that. It's not that we're endorsing it as a final product. It's just for the purpose of public exhibition.
We'll just check this carefully. This is what we have decided, and we have identified the changes to the draft instrument which we feel should be included. That accord with your view?
That's fine.
The red seems fine.
Is that fine with you?
Yep. So we'll get rid of what's in green.
Because the decision is unanimous, we don't need to take a formal vote. So the decision of the panel is to recommend the planning proposal for the Consolidated Local Environmental Plan subject to the changes that appear on the screen. And you should note that the decision is unanimous. All right, I think that deals with that item. So with that, we can move on to item two. Item two is the planning proposal for 245 Marion Street, Leichhardt. The panel inspected the site of this planning proposal earlier in the day, and we are familiar with what is proposed. We note that there are three people who wish to speak on this proposal: Mr. Figgis, Mr. Gallagher, and Mr. Hack. Who wishes to go first? For the record, just tell us who you are.
Bernard Gallagher, Director of Planning from Ethos Urban.
As I said, we've looked at the assessment report, we've been to the site,
yep.
We looked at the plans, we know what's proposed.
Great.
We see that there is a recommendation against this.
Yep.
Over to you.
Thank you. Obviously, you know, this is a there was a previous planning proposal that was rejected by both Council and the Department of Planning at the time, but I think it's useful just to note a couple of comments that the Department of Planning made as part of that exercise, because that's really set the frame for what this planning proposal was supposed to do. And I think there's some words in there around the Department, and this was the note back from Marcus Ray, which is in your package, that the site's appropriate for a renewal, but that current scheme didn't have merit. And the Department recognised the site had an opportunity for urban renewal, being located close to the light rail stop in an area that had already been transitioned to residential use and so on and so forth. So there was a recognition that the site at the time could change, but the scheme at the time, the two major flaws was it was too big. It was 15 storeys, I think, by recognition. And it didn't really have any employment uses at all, let alone sort of industrial uses. I think there was a minor bit of retail. So that was really the response that this scheme tried to do, and the whole principle was trying to actually flip that around, and the first premise was to retain an industrial use, and primarily the intent is to retain the automotive use in some form or another. That's the use that's been on the site in over various years and that the owner is has experience in, and the idea is to actually keep that going obviously a new form. Just to respond to a few of the issues that have been raised, I suppose the first use is the loss of industrial space, and reading the council report, there's obviously that's probably number one issue. Again, I say the proposal and the LEP has been drafted in a way to retain that. Yes, it's a new formation, and I'll talk a little bit about that in a moment, but I suppose we'd argue that we're not losing industrial space. The natural the other commentary on that is that it would limit the expansion or the intensification of that use. And I don't necessarily agree with that, because under the current framework, most industrial areas only get to about 0.65 under the planning controls and other types of constraints, basic economic constraints as well, car parking requirements and the like. So you don't, even though the FSR of the site's 1-to-1, you'd very rarely get that an industrial site getting to 1-to-1. So that drove the rationale for the amount of light industrial floor space being what's there now. In terms of intensification, there's already some limitations. You've seen the site. There's obviously an aged care building next door. There's, neighbours in the street too. So to suggest that this site could be used in the future for high-impact light industrial uses, I think, again, that would be constrained by its location. There's an assumption through both the reports, the design review and the council report, that has, in my view, a very narrow focus of the context. They basically said, well, it's out of context because it's going to be an eight-storey building, and when you look at it, the immediate surrounds as it is, it's out of context. And obviously that's absolutely right, because when you look at context very narrowly, that's the sort of result you'd get here. But I think it's important to have a look at how we arrived at the floor space and the overall height was to look at the to look at all of the light rail stops along the line, right down from Dulwich Hill right up to where we are towards the north. And when you look at those, and I'm happy to pass this around, you get this very distinctive pattern of right at the station, either in terms of a point building or a small precinct, of buildings of sort of 8 to 10 stories of between 2 to 3 FSR. If you look at Dulwich Hill, Waratah Mills, Arlington Grove, Lewisham, what will happen around the Taverners Hill precinct, they're all going to follow. They all already are at that scale, or about to transition to that scale in the sense of Taverners Hill. So when you look at context in that context, this is completely in character with that. Yes, it will be a building in an area of low density housing, but that's consistent with the pattern along the light rail line. Again, also, there's sort of no recognition that the local area around here is due to change. So just to the south, again, I'm happy to pass this around if somebody could. Sure. Again, both council's local planning strategy and the Parramatta Road strategy envisages almost the entire precinct to the south of Marion Street down to Parramatta Road to transition, and building heights again of up to 8 stories, 32 metres will characterise that area. So to sort of say that this area, this site is in an area that will forever stay as single houses, I think I think we need to look a bit broader than that. The other comment I'd like to make is just on the concept of precedent. There's a number of comments around adverse precedent, and this type of thing is sort of unheard of and can't be done. Well, there's a number of existing precedent, a fantastic precedent, but also a number in the pipeline that I'll take you through in a minute. The most obvious example is the East Village project at Zetland, which has an automotive repair facility with residential above, and it's been operating for 5 years or so. Works perfectly fine. Design built, as purpose built, as would this would be. It's obviously got to have sound attenuation and all of those types of things, but it can be done, and it's been done before. In terms of other principles or precedents, I should say, at the moment, Council's got on exhibition its planning proposal for the Dulwich Hill precinct, and this is the one that's, in many cases, very similar to what we've got here, because it's an former industrial piece of land, literally right across the road from the light rail site. So. And the planning proposal, which Council supported, is to take that from, and it's on exhibition at the moment, I actually got the notification last week, to rezone it from industrial land to a combination of B5 and residential above. So it's a little bit different, B5 at ground level, but residential above. But in terms of the principle of a specific use or type of use at ground floor, that's not your typical mixed use, cafe and the like, it's exactly the same, and that's going through the council process at the moment. There's obviously the gateway approval at Balmain Road, which in terms of the planning mechanism is almost identical to what we're proposing on this site, retaining the industrial use at ground level and adding the residential uses above. And the gateway determination, it hasn't been determined yet, but the gateway determination is going through that. And I note it was interesting at the time, Council's letter to the applicant said, Council supports the retention of a minimum 6,000 square metres of employment use, and Council's position is to retain the light industrial zone for the site and add residential accommodation. And that was Council's letter at the time. So, so there's examples of this happening now, but also I think we're going to see this more often. And the SGS report sort of touches on this concept, and I know this quote didn't find its way into the officer's report, but you know, they say this is SGS's assessment of this proposal. The proposal provides an innovative take on mixed-use development, and one that should be closely examined. The overall design is intelligent and seems to support the current urban service business's car repair, although further detail needs to be provided. Traditionally, mixed-use developments have focused on combining retail and commercial and with residential uses, so the suggested proposal presents an alternative or a new approach to land use coexistence. And I know it's not Inner West Council, but SGS's employment study for Canada Bay, which is part of the Eastern City, actually puts that forward as a new typology of use. So, and they've even got a diagram here of light industrial uses with residential above, directly above, in a vertical stacking arrangement. So to say, adverse precinct, well, this is, you know, the days when industrial zones had to be separated from residential zones was obvious at the time when you could not coexist those two uses, but things are changing pretty rapidly and will continue so. So a couple of final comments. My colleague Stephen will just talk a little bit about the design issues because they are separate from the planning issues, and Adrian can address any issues around the economic strategy. There's a couple of comments in there around commercial uses and retail uses and outer centre development. But the only retail is 250 square metres, and that was to accommodate a cafe and a small shop on Marion Street to really provide some amenity for people going and toing and from the light rail. If that's such a big issue, that can be taken out, but I think that would be a pretty poor outcome. The other issue is by having a commercial use at ground level, that could either form part of the automotive use that's primarily below ground, but it could be interdependent. If that was something that needed to be changed and that to be more specific type of use, that can be easily considered as well. We just thought that would probably be a better outcome in terms of employment over the site. So, and obviously the VPA, which I know is not a matter of consideration, but it's sort of raised here in the report. Obviously that's an initial offer, so to sort of say, well, that's the, you know, that doesn't meet, well, obviously it's an offer and it shouldn't really be a matter of your consideration in terms of merit. So I'm happy to pass the rest of those documents around if you like. They should be in order. I'm happy to take any questions, or do you want to go to my colleagues? I'll leave it up to you.
Just wait there. There may be some questions.
Sure.
Questions? Yes.
Mr. Gallagher, you drew our attention to the SGS report. I'm just looking at the last paragraph of that report, and I'll just quote something from it. It says, "This proposal is considered not to be suitable in this location." I thought I'd better... That's the total report, so do you have a comment on that?
Yeah, please turn on the mic.
I suppose, obviously, I have a different view. The light rail is changed the context for the site. You've seen the site; it's hardly, you know, it once was part of a bigger industrial precinct. Obviously, that is no longer the case, this approach is trying to achieve a balance between keeping a use and a use that is important for the local community, but also taking advantage of its location. If I think it couldn't work on this site right next to the light rail, then where else would it work?
Okay, thanks.
The other examples you've given us are at other locations. This location is a bit different in that on the other side of the line, it's adjacent to the Haberfield conservation area, which is all single story and will remain single story under this council's planning controls. There is, in fact, in the draft consolidated LEP that we've just recommended and considered, that will remain a single story residential area. as long as we can imagine it'll be there. So we don't see any similarity between this location and those other locations that you've described.
If we look at, again, up and down that light rail line where you have building heights of up to 8 to 10 storeys, I'm pretty sure almost all of those areas, Dulwich Hill, Arlington, I think the other side of the Lewisham would be adjacent to conservation areas. So that's not. I disagree that this is such a unique case. All of those sites along that inner west line would, if not directly adjacent, be very close proximity in a very similar distance to us to a conservation area, which will all stay as single storey as well. Again, that's this difference between having a single point of density around a light rail is completely consistent with the character of along that light rail line.
One of the other examples you quoted was Zetland, where there was a car service centre with residential apartments above. That is in the middle of a high-density residential area. This is not a high-density area.
Yeah, I was using that example as an example of mixing the vertical mixes of the uses, automotive with residential above, not context, obviously. Yep. Totally agree with you. It's a completely different context. Thank you
very much. Who's next? Your name, please.
Adrian Hack. I'm a principal at Hill PDA, small firm of property economics,
right.
Evaluation, planning services, and other.
All right, proceed.
So my role in this was really to assess the economic impacts of the proposal, the planning proposal. So just to start with, we know that the site, or we know where it's located, so it's right next to the light rail station that's been mentioned before. On the other side of the site is the Uniting the Marion building, so that's the aged person's accommodation, housing. It's also, I should add, it's about 300 metres within walking distance of the marketplace, like Art Marketplace. So very, very well located, obviously. It's an IN2 zoning, we know that. There's a current FSR constraint of 1:1. The existing building on the subject site has an FSR of about 0.65, although I have seen a higher number used, but it's in that range, about 0.65, maybe up to about 0.75. At the moment. The site's a little over 5,000 square metres, so we've got somewhere between about 3,000 and 4,000 square metres of floor space on that site. It's highly unlikely that that site, under the current zoning, could be redeveloped because you're just not going to knock down a building of that sort of scale and put up something that's only a little bit slightly larger in size and make it work. So the planning proposal seeks to introduce site-specific controls to facilitate the redevelopment of the site for a mix of uses. It includes the reinstatement of the automotive service centre, adds some commercial and retail uses, and residential apartments up to 8 storeys above the natural ground level. Looking at the economic impacts, as I mentioned before, the site's been used as a car service centre. At the time of the report that I prepared, there was about 13 workers on site. It could be around 20 at the moment, a bit of a guesstimate, but perhaps about 20 workers on site at the moment, given the size of that building and its use. The planning proposal would reinstate the existing car service centre, providing 3,000 square metres for about 20 workers. It would also add a further 2,200 square metres of additional employment spaces. Total workers on site is expected to be about 132. So it's more than a six-fold increase in the number of workers on site currently. Gross value added, that's the contribution to the local economy, would increase from around about 0.7 million at the moment up to about 9 million or over 9 million per annum. so significant increase in gross value added. Construction cost is estimated at about $67 million, and the jobs on site in construction in the early report stated it was around the 140 mark. That was actually a bit of an underestimate based on updated input-output tables. The figures probably more likely be about 180 jobs on site directly in construction. Other economic impacts, mentioned before, it'll reinstate the existing business, but also provide that business in, and that's related to local urban services, it'll reinstate those local urban services in modern premises, so replacing old or older with new. It'll provide housing for around 244 residents right next to the light rail station and within or 200 metres from Leichhardt Marketplace. These residents would spend about $4.5 million every year on retail goods and services, which will support the existing businesses in the locality. It's consistent with the whole principles of transient-orientated development. Transport sustainability, and would reduce the use of private motor vehicle usage, and obviously contribute to the whole 30-minute objective of the Sydney Region Plan. And that's it for me. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much.
There you go. I can hear it too. Ferguson Jefferson Tiba Architects, I'm the principal and I'm the concept designer of this development, and I've been involved with it since about 2004 when my client brought it to me. I've lived some anguishing moments with this design over time. Now, I'd like to start my presentation to you from an architect's point of view, putting the site in and the design concept into context, and I hope that I'm not repeating things that others have said, but I'll try to keep it brief. I'll also bring in some issues where I'll have a different perspective to those expressed in the Architectural Excellent Panel report. The site in context, it's a traditional industrial site as we know. It came about, no doubt, because of the goods rail line, and it would have been intended to have contained buildings that were serviced by the light rail. The light rail has now changed, and the goods rail has now changed to a light rail. It's now handling people, not produce and goods. It's logical that the site now be people orientated, not heavy manufacturing or storage. The design of our building has taken that into consideration. We have considered soft uses for the building as to how I imagine those uses would be conducted on such a site. It has a frontage to both Marion Street and to Walter Street. The site's located on a north-south axis, which gives it some advantage for development in that the shadows cast by this building tend to fall on itself rather than others. It would a tennis court is oriented the same way for the same reasons. Historically, the buildings that were built along the light rail have been taller than the edge of the residential areas. The light rail would have been at the edge of the residential areas of Sydney at the time, and so it would always have punctuated the context of the light rail of the railway line with taller buildings. Moving on to streetscape, I note that there isn't very much of a pattern in Marion Street in the vicinity of this development. The only building within sight of us is the Uniting Care building next door, which doesn't pay a lot of attention to streetscape and doesn't offer any particular character. On the other side of Marion Street is the back of a grandstand, which provides no relief to Marion Streetscape. At the northern end of the block in Marion Street, there are single-storey houses that have a traditional pattern of streetscape. We've chosen a style of building that makes a slightly different statement, and others might think that it should pay a bit more attention to the residential rhythm of the locality. And I'm open to suggestions there. The back of the site, we have modulated the building a little more in keeping with the rhythm and scale of the suburb of Leichhardt. The land use, I think we've talked about it. I'd just like to quickly make the point that with the site already contains a motor service facility, and it's not a bad site for a motor service facility because people can leave their car there for the day, jump on the light rail and do their normal business. Every motor service facility wants to be in such a location. Now, I do... My firm does a lot of work in the motor industry, and we have done hundreds of motor service industry buildings. And if I could just add a couple of things that might be escaping people, but it's been referred to here as a motor-oriented development in the Architectural Excellence Report. A motor-oriented development, it is not. It could well be that the operation of this facility into the future will not involve people coming to the site at all, but the technicians going and collecting cars, servicing them and taking them away. It could be that these cars won't be seen by the public. But in any event, we've chosen to put the motor service operation downstairs because it doesn't need to be anywhere else. No longer do they need to have the same access to streets as they used to. They no longer road test on public roads. So that leaves us with, if I could just talk about the building form for a moment. The concept again was to put the heavier industrial use underground where it can work quite well. We've got urban services uses at ground floor, and I again imagine that they'll be urban services related to the light rail and to people coming and going, people accessing the site via the light rail. They won't be heavy industry, and they'll be rather innocuous, and I think they'll add to the activities in the through-site link. There was a comment in the Architectural Excellence Report about the form of the building. The towers, I think, we've already talked about. But if I could add two more elements to that context, there is a podium which separates the residential uses from the urban services uses. And I think that should be a fairly strong podium. And we've projected that to the east with a colonnade to provide, again, further relief. It's not a continuous podium. It's in two parts. There's a lower podium in the centre of the building, and that will provide open space principally for the urban services users. Now, I should add that open space between the two towers is actually a continuation of the open space suggested by Hawthorne Street to the east of us. If you were to look at the map, you'd see that Hawthorne Street looks as though it was intended to travel west to the railway line, but it was interrupted by development. We've left that space open between our buildings in respect to that open space described by Hawthorne Street. And I think it breaks up the scale of the development quite well. It also provides those users on that lower podium level to enjoy the space to the west of them, that is the public open space. There was a comment in the Architectural Excellence report about the western side of the building being bland, and it did react with me. We've all seen bland buildings facing railway lines with graffiti all over them, but that's not what we had in mind. We have shown fenestration in that western wall of the building. By nature of its place, it would be fire-rated. It would probably be infill panels of glass brick or something similar, providing light and amenity to the urban services uses at that level. It's not an appropriate level for residential because it's too close to the light rail, perfect for the urban services. I notice that there is a in the Greenway plans for a connection along Hawthorne Canal, there is a suggestion of a pedestrian pathway on the railway land to the west of our building. I would suggest that our through-site link will be a better connection between Marion Street and Walter Street for the people of the suburb. It will be overlooked by the residents of the development, and it will add to the activity in that through-site connection. I think it will be a safer place for people to move than the pathway between the building and the light rail. Cycleways, of course, are located on the other side of the canal along Hawthorne Street. Sorry, along Hawthorne Canal. There was a comment about the viability of the motor repair station underground, and for that matter, any different industrial use that might want to occupy that space. If I could just point out that most industrial users these days are located within buildings that are built to their boundaries. There are no windows in boundaries of industrial buildings, and any openings have to be fire-rated, fire-protected. So it's not unusual that an industrial or a quasi-industrial use will not have light and views. As Bernard, my colleague, just said, if it was felt that the people spaces associated with the downstairs industrial space needed some more amenity, they could be located at the podium level. The design is quite flexible, but I have designed buildings with industrial uses underground, and it's never been an issue. There were comments about the visual impact of the towers, and there's been a comment today about the Haverfield Conservation Area. I note that there is a parkland between the development and the Haverfield Conservation Area, and I note that the conservation area frontage is about 120 metres away from our site, and it's 120 metres of rail, open space, and a suggestion of a forest. There's quite a dense tree band along the western side of the light rail, and if you, from my calculations, if one were to look at the site from the closest houses of the urban conservation area, you would only see the top three stories of this development above the tree line. Again, 120 metres away. I don't think that's an issue. Others might differ, but I don't think that's an issue. There have been suggestions that the 3D views might not be accurate. We have tested them geometrically, and they seem to be true representation of the bulk and scale of the building, as indicated on the orthographic drawings. Overshadowing, if I could point out that a comment has been that the development will overshadow Lambert Park. It will. There'll be no shadow during the equinoxes, but there is a shadow starting to creep into the site at 12 o'clock on the winter solstice. That shadow, I think, will be absorbed by the shadow of the grandstand that's already there. But from about 3 o'clock, the shadow will start to creep over the ground. It's a small impost on that site. The residential amenity, again, we have provided a... We have provided a strong separation between the residential components of the building and the other uses. That could be developed, I think, in time. It's a comparatively new model, and I'm quite excited about where it will take us. I think we can manage the protection of the residential amenity from the industrial, and vice versa. I think that the industrial can be protected from the complaints of residents, given that the industrial won't be heavy industry, it'll be transport oriented. And finally, if I could talk about design flexibility, the building will be concrete framed. It'll no doubt be post-tension concrete. The structure in the basement spaces, and for that matter the podium spaces, will tend to have an 8 to 9 metre grid, and that can be flexible, that can adapt to many uses today. I think it's not untypical of a multi-storey industrial building in any circumstances. The issues will come with floor-to-floor heights, and we've provided for that in our building. So I think the spaces beneath the ground and the spaces above the ground and beneath the podium will be adaptable to future uses as these uses evolve over time and through our new industrial revolution. That's all I have to say, and I'm happy to take questions.
Questions?
You've touched on the Architectural Excellence Panel report. What you didn't do was talk of their conclusion. And I draw your attention to the conclusion, the statement, the location of urban services, and I stress urban services, not necessarily car servicing, in a basement location with no natural amenity is not supported. The proposal sets a poor built form precedent for integration of light industrial and residential uses and is likely to compromise the viability of the light industrial use. Do you have any comments on that conclusion?
I have already said that most industrial buildings today...
I've already said that most industrial buildings today in confined spaces are built to their boundaries. Those that we are doing now are multi-storey, and they have no amenity to the industrial spaces. It's something that disappeared over time, given the pressure on land, I suppose. But those spaces can also be incorporated into the podium. So, as I said before, I think Bernard said a moment ago that if, for instance, it's a motor workshop downstairs, there could be a service reception area within the podium, windows out to the open space, and the more industrial functions carried out below. Wall space is fairly important in an industrial development today, and they're usually solid walls, in my experience. Could I just add to that the open space above the podium, the lower podium in the middle of the site, we had thought that would be open space for the urban services users and the industrial users, and the open space on top of the towers be purely for the residential inhabitants of the building.
So just on that, because my reading of the plans is you've got level one ground floor, and between the two urban services there's a driveway, then level two, the next floor up, and level is where you've got your communal open space. That's got residential adjoining it, and there's only commercial office fronting Marion Street with a depth of 8.4 metres. So, and then the same thing on level three. It's basically there's a 8.4 metre depth of the commercial, but it's all the rest of it's residential. So in terms of the communal open space, it appears as if it's residential that opens off it.
Yes.
So where is it that you've got any open space opening onto the urban services area?
That podium that you were just talking about, I see, could be used by the urban services users or the residents, and it can be accessible to the public. The residences that are immediately adjacent to that space would probably have a little courtyard separating them from that common property to their own, but the residences would have exclusive use, I imagine, to the space on top of the building.
At the moment, the plans that we've got, although obviously they're just indicative of what could occur on the site, have a podium that the ground floor is where the urban services is, and a slither along Marion Street, and the rest is residential.
Yes. Yes, the slither along Marion Street is intended to service the light rail, the commuters, and for that matter, the residents of the development. It's not to compete with retail in the area.
Why do you need the residential component at all?
I think there are two drivers. One is the economics of it. As Adrian said a moment ago, there doesn't seem to be a case to redevelop the site for purely industrial use. There's not enough incentive to do so. It has a floor space ratio of 1:1. It's using about 0.6:1 now, and there wouldn't be enough in it to redevelop the site to achieve the same again. The residential makes it a viable chance for renewal. The other aspect is that it's adjacent to the light rail, and it seems to be a terribly sensible thing to put residential development along the light rail. The rail was originally designed to transport goods. Now it transports people. It seems logical to put people in that vicinity. It's right there. There are other aspects of the site that make it very amenable for residential use. The Hawthorne Canal and the space, the Greenway space on the other side of the light rail is fantastic, and it connects with the bay, and it would be a wonderful place to live. Of course, it satisfies the government's drive for increased residential accommodation in serviced areas.
All right, no more questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
In view of what we've just heard, I invite the council to respond.
Mr. Chair, I'm Daniel East. I'm the Acting Manager of Strategic Planning and Policy here at the Inner West Council. I've just been listening to the proponents' verbal submissions. Council officers have written a 26-page report that have assessed the planning proposal in its current form, and I stand by the recommendation, which is to not support the planning proposal in its current form. We believe that the proposal fails the strategic merit test in terms of preparing planning proposals. In particular, that is in relation to it being inconsistent with the Greater Sydney Regional Plan 2018 and the Eastern City District Plan 2018. specifically in relation to the retention of industrial land, and that's our chief concern with this proposal. From our perspective, relinquishing industrial sites, particularly in the inner city, such as the inner west, is costly in the long term, and especially when that cannot be converted back into any other uses. And that warning has been supported by the Greater Sydney Commission in their thought paper, in Metropolis the Works. This planning proposal is not consistent with the retain and manage approach. It introduces competing land uses on an existing industrial site that's zoned IN2. And the proposed residential accommodation, commercial and retail spaces mean that it will adversely impact the long-term viability of the existing industrial services on the site. So, you know, it's not just about the jobs that Adrian Hatt from Hill PDA spoke to just earlier. What we're concerned about is the number of jobs, the mix of jobs, and where they're located within the city, and that should be the primary objective rather than just the economic outcomes as stated in the retain and manage framework. We believe the proposal is also inconsistent with our local strategic planning statement, which talks about retaining all industrial zoned land as stands at the moment. And that's been backed up by the draft local housing strategy and the draft economic lands strategy. We also believe it's inconsistent with the ministerial directions in relation to business and industrial zones and integrating land use and transport. In relation to the built form discussions, obviously that is a secondary aspect from our perspective, but we stand by the AEP referral comments, which talk about the usability of the industrial spaces as proposed in this planning proposal. From our perspective, it would create an adverse precedent in terms of conversion of industrial land in the LGA to be only in basements. And that would have adverse impacts in terms of its flexibility of its design, and we stand by our recommendations in that regard. The SGS report was discussed by Ethos Urban in their verbal submission. What they failed to include in that was the fact that such a design in terms of basements may be considered in other zones, such as a B4 zone, but not in this context, which is the IN2 zone. What was also discussed verbally was a number of other planning proposals that Council is assessing at the moment. One was for New Canterbury Road in Dulwich Hill. That particular planning proposal is a number of years old. It's at least 4 years old, and therefore is covered by savings provisions in the retain and manage framework. The retain and manage framework came out in 2018, and so these planning proposals are long before that 2018 timeframe. So that applies for the New Canterbury Road planning proposal, and also the planning proposal that was discussed for Balmain Road in Lilyfield. Other than that, I'll just reiterate that from our perspective, we don't see the strategic merit of proceeding with the planning proposal to rezone industrial land. And I'd invite the panel to ask me any questions.
Yes. Mr. Easter, in relation to the retain and manage phrase, just two points if you could clarify. One, I presume it applies to the whole of the municipality, to every piece of industrial land. And two, that it has it takes precedence, being a strategic regional direction from the Commission over the local control situation. Could you clarify both of those points for me?
Absolutely. So it applies to all the industrial zone land as it was last year in 2018 when the framework or advice came into force. And that does take precedence in terms of the importance and the no-regrets approach to any rezoning applications thereafter. That is correct.
So in relation to retention, as I understand, the applicant's position to some extent is that they are retaining the same amount of floor space, GFA, industrial GFA, that's on the cert now. Mm-hmm. And can you explain why that isn't retention, and also why residential is a competing land use? What's the logic behind residential being a competing land use?
During the assessment of the planning proposal, we've referred the application to the Architectural Excellence Panel. And also a peer review was undertaken by SGS Economics and Planning. The conclusion of those two papers was that the location of industrial land in a basement, while innovative, was not appropriate in this particular case. It could be appropriate in other instances that already have some residential development, such as B4, but not in the IN2 zone. The location in the basement, we believe, adversely affects the usability of the site in terms of natural light and ventilation, and would set a dangerous precedent for other small industrial precincts, of which we have many in the LGA, into the future. In terms of its impact on the residential aspect, or introducing residential into industrial land, I would say, in the first instance, amenity is a significant concern. Once you place dense residential flat building typologies into these locations, it adversely affects the ability of those different businesses to operate into the future.
All right, so if you had the industry above ground, you had the 0.6 as to 1 above ground, or a 1 to 1 above ground, that would be essentially retaining the amount of industrial use that's currently on the site.
Yep.
But by putting residential above it, inherently there is a land use conflict, in the sense that certain industrial uses, by their very nature of being, if you're going to have the full scope of industrial uses, that some of them are dirty and noisy, and that would be inherently a conflict with residential. Is that what you're saying?
At the moment, the adjoining site is also zoned IN2. That's an aged care facility. That's not actually industrial use. It's a commercial use. So there aren't any residential uses certainly on the site or adjacent to the site, on the other side is light industry. There is some residential properties at the rear. Having